they were comedians, but they kind of, their niche was country music, and so it was when Jeff Foxworthy was really popular. And so we thought, oh, you know, we were young, we didn't have anything to do, it was free, so we went down, and we're sitting in the upstairs of the Ryman, and they, I don't remember how many people came. Some of the people you probably would know, some of them you didn't know. But I remember it was one of the most unusual things. We were sitting there about halfway through the show, this guy gets up, and Mary Beth and I were like, man, he goes to our church. His name is Henry Cho. He's a Korean guy, or he's a Korean-American, which was part of his shtick because he's from Alabama, so it's just kind of funny the way it worked out. But we're sitting there listening, and he's hilarious, and we find out that he was in the movie The Goonies, and or not The Goonies, he was in Revenge of the Nerds, I think. He was in that movie when he was a kid. And anyways, it was just this weird thing, so we're sitting there like, no, I'm pretty sure that's the guy from our church. And so later on we find out, of course, I was an intern nobody, so nobody ever told me that we had a movie star to go to our church. That has nothing to do with the part of the story I want to tell you, but that was my fleeting moment of fame. I don't know if you've ever done one of these live TV recording things, but one of the things they did was they recorded the introduction, right? And Foxworthy came out, some of the more famous people came out, and they did their deal. And then they would talk to us once in a while when it wasn't being recorded and kind of explain what was happening. And so they recorded the introduction, and then they came back and said, okay, now we're gonna record the ending. So you got to pretend like you just saw this great show, but we're going to do the ending now. And then after that, then they did all the, and I don't know, there was like six or seven different like stand-up routines. But it was interesting because they said the reason we do this is because you still have all your energy and everybody's still excited, and so it comes across a lot better than if you wait till the end of the show, which I just thought that was kind of interesting. And all of you are shaking, you're nodding your head because it makes sense, right? You're like, yeah, that totally makes sense. You see it at sporting events all the time. It's just so raucous at the very beginning, like football games are the most because they take forever now. At the beginning of a football game, it's so loud and there's so much passion, but you just can't keep that up through the whole game. Like, I mean, you'll just be dead. Now, game 7 of the World Series, Cameron, was a little different. I think we were pretty much solid from first pitch to the end. Like, but in most of those instances, it's hard to keep that energy. It's hard to keep that momentum. I think during this past football season, actually, I heard some commentary, and they were talking about why some of these really good football programs and football teams will almost always stumble along the way through their season and either lose or almost lose to a team that they shouldn't lose to. And I heard somebody say that one of the coaches, and I don't remember who this was, it might have been what was the Ohio State coach, it doesn't matter, but they said, you know, you can really only get your guys up to really, really play in two or three games every year. You know, because if you're playing 10, 11, 12 games, you just can't expect that same passion. And if you're a football fan, you know that that's the case. Val, is that kind of the case all the way down? I mean, you just, sometimes you go out there and it just don't have the same energy. Like, it's the same guys that played last week out of their mind, and this week they're playing against a much inferior opponent, and they still just, and it's like a great kind of testament to how life is. Like, you just can't live every day like it's Christmas morning. I mean, you'll just peter out. And Val did a great job this morning of saying, hey, you just come. It's the grind. Every Sunday you come, you live life. It's part of your faith. Some Sundays you leave and you just feel inspired. I mean, 2 weeks ago was Easter morning, right? I'm coming to believe that the worst Sunday of the year is the Sunday after Easter. Everybody's here on Easter morning and everybody's excited and everybody's got family. And then I don't know what happens the next week, but everybody's gone, and the people that are here are still like on this post-Easter hangover. And I love the fact that, you know, if you grew up in churches like ours, you might say, well, we celebrate Easter every Sunday. You're like, no, we don't. No, we don't. There's just some Sundays that we're still reflecting on the resurrection or the crucifixion, you know. We're still just kind of dragging through. And I don't know that we ever have to apologize for that. I think that's part of what we do when we're raising children. Because they want every day to be an exciting, great, wonderful day. And somehow we try to convey to them that it is. Like, you know, the psalm, this is the day that the Lord has made. Let's rejoice. I mean, it is a beautiful, wonderful day, but you don't get butterflies every day. I mean, some of you got to go to work tomorrow and you're thinking, oh, crap. Monday is not my favorite day of the week. And maybe the first Monday of your first job is exciting, and maybe the second Monday of your first job, and maybe your first year anniversary, but after your 25th anniversary on a Monday, it just starts to peter out a little bit, doesn't it? Or maybe it's just some random Thursday or Tuesday or whatever it is, but life is just kind of monotonous. And I'm way too young to say that, but those of you who are older than me have affirmed it, right? That it just... it's monotonous. And I think so much of what we talk about in church and so much of what we talk about in life are the peaks and the valleys. We talk about the great moments of weddings and the birth of children and baptism and holidays and vacations, and all those things get so much of the attention. And then on the other side, we talk about deaths and funerals and sicknesses and all those things because they're so devastating and they're so difficult. But in reality, 95% of life is lived between those two things. You're either on your way to the next tragedy or you're on your way to the next mountaintop, but most of the time, you're in between those. And you get an Easter Sunday, and you get a Christmas, and you get a vacation, and you have these things to celebrate. And I just maybe wonder if perseverance might be the most important word we talk about this year, because it certainly is one of the more challenging. I want to begin by reading from the Psalms. I was trying to find a psalm that kind of captured a lot of what we want to talk about this morning. This is from Psalm 27, beginning in verse 4. Just a beautiful, one of the more poetic, just beautiful psalms. "One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. For in the day of trouble he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his sacred tent and set me high upon a rock. Then my head will be exalted above the enemies who surround me. At his sacred tent I will sacrifice with shouts of joy. I will sing and make music to the Lord. Hear my voice when I call, Lord. Be merciful to me and answer me. My heart says of you, seek his face. Your face, Lord, will I seek. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my helper. Do not reject me or forsake me, God my Savior. Though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. Teach me your ways, Lord. Lead me in a straight path because of my oppressors. Do not turn me over to the desires of my foes, for false witness rise up against me, spouting malicious accusations. I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living." So I love all of that, right? It's this wonderful picture of us on our greatest days in our relationship with God. I just want to live with you forever, and I just want to be with you. Some of the songs that we say reflect that. It just seems to me to echo the best of our faith. And yet, when you kind of try to put that alongside the reality of our experiences, in a lot of ways, we just kind of feel like so much of life is sitting there hoping for that feeling, wanting that feeling, wanting to feel the passion of God, wanting to feel passionate for our relationship with God. And if we ask you how you are with that, you may just shrug your shoulders and go, okay. It's that middle ground. And so at the very end of the psalm, the very last sentence says, "Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord." And I don't know that there's anybody in here that's very good at waiting. We've talked about this before. It's just not in our DNA. We are not built to wait. And yet so much of what God calls us to do and to be is going to take patience. It's going to take time. So there's so many parallels between working out physically, you know, when we want to lose weight or we want to be healthier. I mean, I just want to take a pill or I just want to do a workout routine and a month later or a week later be in the great prime physical shape. And if you walk into a gym and you talk to an athletic trainer, you're like, "Yeah, I want to lose 50 pounds. I'm in a wedding, you know, in June. Can we get this out?" And they're going to look at you like, "No, this is going to take time. You've got to be patient." Instead of a painting where you just slap some paint on it, it's more like molding clay, and it takes a while for our hearts to get molded, just like our bodies. So much of our faith is about the slow grind. It's about what happens on ordinary days, how we make it through ordinary times. It reminds me of a parable that Jesus taught. In Luke chapter 8, one of his probably better known parables, beginning in verse 1 of chapter 8. After this, Jesus traveled from one town and village to another, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had come were cured of evil spirits and diseases. Mary called Magdalene, who had, whom seven demons have come out of, Joanna, the wife of Chuza, manager of Herod's household, Susanna, many others. And these women were helping to support them out of their own means. While a large crowd was gathering and people were coming to Jesus from town after town, he told them this parable. This is kind of at the beginning of Jesus. He's really trying to attract crowds. And he gives them this perspective. He said, a farmer went out to sow his seed. And as he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and it was trampled on. And the birds ate it up. Some fell on rocky ground, and when it came up, the plants withered because they had no moisture. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up with it and choked the plants. And still other seed fell on good soil. It came up and yielded a crop 100 times more than was sown. And when he said this, he called out, whoever has ears, let him hear. His disciples asked, hey, what did this parable mean, Jesus? Jesus responded by saying, the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of God has been given to you, but to others I speak in parables, so that those seeing they may not see, though hearing they may not understand. This is the meaning of the parable. The seed is God's word. Those along the path are those who hear, and then the devil comes and snatches it away from their hearts, so they don't believe and be saved. Those on the rocky grounds are the ones who receive the word with joy when they hear it, but they have no root. They believe for a little while, and after a time of testing, they fall away. The seed that fell among the thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they're choked out by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they don't mature. But the seed that fell on good soil stands for those with a noble and good heart who hear the word, retain it, and by persevering, produce a crop. Kathy read that passage earlier, which I think is one of the strangest verses to listen to. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you face temptations and trials. Those two things don't seem to make sense. Why would I celebrate being tested in my trials? Well, there's something about God working on us. Just like there's no pain, there's no gain, that old cliche of working out. The same seems to be true of our faith in some regards. So you have this parable, and I wonder, as I sat and thought about it, and I had this passage from 2 Corinthians where Paul talks about in chapter 6 all the persecutions and trials and things that he faced. And I thought about looking out to you guys this morning, and I thought, hey, what kind of trials and temptations and persecutions do we face? You know, I mean, really. Paul's talking about all the beatings and you know, all the stuff that they were going through. And if we're honest with ourselves, that is not our greatest temptation and difficulty today. I mean, our great temptation and trial, and I'm not saying those don't exist, but I think our great temptation and trial is just mediocrity. It's just the mundaneness of life. And it may even be that our biggest obstacle to the kingdom for people in our country and our culture today is bored. I mean, we just get bored with God. I mean, think about how countercultural our hour and a half is this morning, right? We're not a real entertaining group. Sorry, no offense to any of us, right? But we're not here to entertain, and yet we live every other hour of our lives expecting to be entertained. Let me give you a side sermon about fidgets. Do you know about fidgets? Lorraine, we were talking about those last night. Sarah, how are the teachers loving fidgets? Kathy? This is just, what are we doing? Like, so if you guys don't know, Bill, I had to inform Bill last night because Bill's old and Lorraine didn't know. Did you know, they just came like a fire, and all of a sudden Clark comes home one day. He's not here, so we can talk about him. This is what he wants more than anything in his world. Anything. He wants a fidget. These little things. I think we actually had one left over last night. I should have brought out. Jordan, you know what a fidget is? Tell us. Like, we don't know. We're all too old. Oh, no. Now we started a riot. Tell us, Jordan. Michael, does this sound exciting to you? I saw Michael just sitting there like, what is he talking about? So Jordan, you love this thing? So you have one? Don't tell my kids you have one. Sarah, how do you like them as a teacher? Yeah, and they're kind of creative for some kids with some disorders where they need kind of to be occupied. Well, then we realize everybody has that disorder in our culture, right? Everybody needs, I mean, it's really not any different than playing on your phone all the time. It's just that instead of a screen, it just gives you something to spin and move and turn. And like, it's such a great, like, example of the struggles that we have with just being here. Just, you know, the very first word, one of the first words this year, I can't remember if it was first word was church. But at some point, early on, one of the words was present. And I think I picked that word and I kind of championed that word because I felt like that was going to be one of the ones that was going to just sustain us through because, man, we have so much difficulty just being present. And it's like we just constantly want something to entertain us. And don't be mistaken to think that that doesn't impact our faith. I think today we just stand aside and we just look to God. Do something exciting. Do something incredible. You know, a couple weeks ago, it was last week, we watched that clip of Gladiator. You know, are you not entertained? We just want, and it's like God is saying, and I mean, just go outside and look at what I've done. You read the story of the gospel and see what I've done. And somehow, some way, maturity in Christ is getting to a place where you're just able to sustain that. And obviously, temptations and trials and difficulties are going to come along. I mean, we know that. But sometimes I think we focus so much on those that we're prepared for that. And we're prepared for the tragedy. We're not prepared for just the average day. We're not prepared for just... And it made me think of some of the seed that falls along. Now, the ones that fell on the hard clay, they just got picked up and didn't really ever have a faith. But it's the other ones that I wonder if they resonate a little bit with our situation. That it's not so much the trials and difficulties we tend to think of with the thorns, but instead it's just we're kind of like our yard if we never treat it with fertilizer, or our garden if we never weed it. It just all of a sudden becomes overgrown with everything else because of kind of apathy or disregard. And I'm afraid that that may be one of our biggest obstacles, is somehow sustaining our faith in the midst of so many other difficulties and challenges. It's the reason I read that psalm to begin with, because I read that this morning as I was kind of going back over things and just thinking about, man, that if we could just stay there. I just want to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And you're my Christian family, and you guys are kind of helping me spur that on in me, and I hopefully can help spur that in you, that we keep our eyes on the prize, right? That language of Paul in Philippians. It's just keep on keeping on. Like in the words of Finding Nemo, what is it, right? It's just keep swimming. I mean, it's one of the great like analogies in all the Disney movies. It just keep going. Just keep swimming. Just keep going. And it's such a boring sermon. I'm sorry. What's your message? Just keep going. Just keep going. But what makes us different than people who don't have a faith is that we keep going because we believe that we're gonna get through. We're gonna be okay. Margaret's not here today. I was over a visit with Margaret and Chuck for a few minutes. We talked about this for just a minute. And, you know, just the difficulty of saying, well, it's going to get better. Well, it's going to be okay is maybe a better way to look at it. It's going to be okay in the end. Like that's what we live every day of our lives as Christians believe. It's going to be okay. I don't care what the news says. I don't care what events are going on in the world. I don't care what the doctor says to you if you have a diagnosis. If you're a Christian, when you're baptized into Christ, it's this acknowledgement that I'm going to be okay. And the hardest thing to do for us is to just remember that every single day. It'll be okay. Today is just a calm, ordinary day. That's okay. We're on our way. We're on our way somewhere. And I think that's the biggest message that we bring to our culture today. Is, hey, so many of our songs we sing about, we're going somewhere. We're on our way, right? This morning, I just want to end in sharing those words for you. There's no great story. There's no great cliche to take with you, but just keep on keeping on. Bill, that's your message a lot of times, right? Just keep going. Just keep going. And there are times when you're going to need somebody to help, and that's what we're here for. We come to each other and say, I don't know if it's, I can keep doing this. And then we gather around them and we say, yes, just keep on, keep on. Let's finish as we close this morning. I'd invite you to stand and sing this song, knowing that we're going to keep on, keep on. So if you'll stand with us.